Comic News, episode 121. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside Mike, the Beer Man Ricker.
Beer Man, yeah, this week was Craft Beer Festival. But I don't want to talk too much about that stuff. We have a special guest on the show today. He's a writer for H1 Ignited, Kwanzaa. You'll hear Chris mispronounce his last name, as he does with all our guests here on Chicago News. So stick around for that awesome interview. You know, we've heard so many origin stories, but this one is like, it's always a new origin story somehow. You think like, okay, you submit your portfolio, but he just called these guys up and had an interview or just walked right in, and it's awesome.
Yeah, well, it's always cool to hear those.
Yeah. It's definitely a product of its time, though. Like, you know, 90s when they're all printing these books out and struggling and...
Oh, yeah. You walk in there now and armed guards take you out and rough you up. And
yeah, Chris and I know we've tried, so can't just walk into Marvel or any place like that. It's frowned upon. All right, so we're going to jump into the news. We got a jam-packed show today and a lot of comics to talk about that we've read over the last couple weeks. And yeah, so TV, you watching anything right now?
But I watched a bunch of Stranger Things the other day, so I'm like partway through season 2.
Nice.
Catch up. I really like that show. And yeah. Swamp Thing, I watched episode 1, and it's really good.
I watched episode 1 as well, so let's talk about that. First off, very sad news, Swamp Thing is being canceled. It is not a product of how the show is. It was just some weird financial, really boring contract stuff that we won't talk about. But the first episode is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they lean really deep into horror, which I really enjoyed about it. We get Abby, we get Alec, we get to know the town, some characters I've seen throughout Swamp Thing lore pop up here and there throughout it. And I was actually shocked. I didn't think we were going to get spoilers, the Swamp Thing in the first episode. I keep saying issue.
Yep.
But we do get him, and he looks fantastic. But possibly my favorite thing of the whole episode was when they're in the morgue with the guy who died. So quick back, rewind. The thing that really causes the catalyst to create Swamp Thing is basically a sickness, and it takes over the town.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have one of the guys who's dead, and he's got like plants growing out of him and everything, and it's all disgusting. And then as they're saying, they're talking, like behind them, the plants just start growing and basically turn him into a plant zombie thing.
I think it was like if the thing took place in the woods is what I would.
Yeah, it did give me a huge John Carpenter vibe.
Yeah, which is awesome. Yep. A lot of practical effects. A little bit of CGI here and there, but it was a strong first episode. We get the origin of Alec and Abby Arcane. And yeah, it's I thought it was a really solid pilot, first episode for sure. And yeah, you do get Swamp Thing at the end, and he looks freaking good.
Yeah, so I definitely recommend it. Just been a busy weekend, so I didn't get to watch episode 2, but I do want to continue on with the series.
Yeah, it's not like anything I've ever watched from a like comic book set, you know, for horror comics, and I think it's going to be good. But yeah, so we got a couple other cancellations coming. Sci-Fi canceled Happy and Deadly Class. Happy is not too surprising to me. You know, like we said, they only went so far with the comic, and this season was kind of really out there and wacky. So they probably lost a few people, I think.
Yeah, I was shocked they got past season 1 because that show was super wacky.
Yeah.
In the best way possible.
Right.
What's shocking to me is the Deadly Class one, because people really enjoyed it. I never actually watched it. But that one is actually being shot. I think Sony owns it. They're actually shopping it to see if they can continue it. So I don't know what's going on at Sci-Fi, but Krypton, keep your eyes open.
Yeah. Well, now it's on DC Universe, right? Krypton is, so.
Well, season 1 is.
Season 1 is, but.
Season 2 is still coming to Sci-Fi.
Right.
So.
Who knows what's going on there. Really exciting news. Blade series coming to Hulu.
Yeah. Blade's awesome.
Yeah. Do we know who's playing him?
No, it's still one of those things where a guy heard it from a guy. So we'll see. But I mean, who plays Blade? Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes.
Yeah. So
please,
I know Wesley has talked with Marvel a bunch of times about doing something. So fingers crossed that it's Blade, because
like, those Wesley, movies are great. If you could behave.
Yeah. Pay your taxes, Wesley.
We're gonna get Marvel's gonna give you a lot of money, but you need to pay your taxes, Wesley. Oh, but it's so much money. You need to pay your bills.
Yeah. I do love Blade the movies. They were really great. So I hope so. I hope that this is real, and I hope that it happens, and I hope Wesley's involved.
Yeah. Not really comic book news, but last weekend was the first weekend for the opening of Star Wars Land at Disney. I had a friend down there. Saw lots of pictures, lots of videos, and dude, I mean, there's a Build-A-Droid, there's a Build-A-Saber, there's a whole cantina bar. Place looks amazing. So if anybody's going, you're gonna have an awesome time. And yes, they're playing the cantina song.
Yeah, I've already told my parents that that if they're gonna give me anything for my one day wedding, if it ever happens, I just want a trip to there.
Yeah,
that's all I want.
It looks amazing. And like in the lightsaber room, there's like people dressed up in like cloaks that look like Jedi, and they're like, they make you pick the crystals. They walk around with like this chamber that's holding the crystals, and you pick the color you want. And oh, dude,
wow, so bad.
Anyways, we're gonna move on to the movie news. So Ava DuVernay and Tom King are officially confirmed to be working on a New Gods movie together.
Who can't say last names now?
So, all right. Okay. Whatever. It's what it's Sunday. Leave me alone. Yeah. So maybe that's why Tom King's kind of lacking in all his other stuff. He wants to write movies now. We'll get to that later. But yeah. So New Gods movie is coming out. Tom King has a hand in writing it, which makes sense because his Omega Men run is like one of the New York Times bestsellers a few years back.
So is Mr. Miracle. I know one Eisner's.
Okay, yeah. So he knows a little bit about New Gods and that whole universe. And I think he can adapt it for a modern day, because that's like, I think that's why it did so well. You know, all the original New Gods stuff is like, it's all about the New Gods being in space and, you're in my space area. We're having a war in space. But now it's like, when you can keep things grounded, you make a character like Mr. Miracle more human than New God, really. I think that has potential to be like a pretty good script.
Yeah, my only concern here is that Marvel's Eternals is 100% coming out before this does. And they're very similar properties, so...
Uh-oh. Oh, geez.
We'll see if it's, you know, a little, who knows, but that's the only concerning thing for me is that, you know, Marvel's kind of beating them to the punch a little bit. I think New Gods have more cachet in the comics world,
mm-hmm.
but that means jack shit in the movie world. So,
jack shit.
But Tom, I mean, I'm down. I give Tom King a shot.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yep. Give him a shot. Also, give Robert Pattinson a shot, because they're giving him three spots. He is confirmed playing Batman, and he's not only playing Batman for one movie, he's going to play Batman for a trilogy.
Yeah. Sparkly Batman. Here it comes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is what it is. Still early. Hey, at least they're making a Batman movie. It's like, if this is how they want to start over their whole DC cinematic universe, you got to start with Batman. You can't be starting with all these other things, throwing them together, and then voila, you just magically have a cinematic universe. I will say this, though. They released the Wonder Woman poster this week, I believe. I think it was like Thursday. Did you see it?
Yes.
Pretty snazzy and pizzazzy. Lots of colors. Pretty cool poster. She's got some awesome battle armor in it, which is pretty cool. But also, it was kind of sad to hear that DC won't be attending Hall H this year at San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah, that's a strange one.
Yeah, so like, and Patty Jenkins was like, yeah, we'll see you in December. It's like, really? We're not going to, that's it? We're just getting a poster until December? Very strange to me, but yeah, so DC Cinematic Universe is not having a presence at Hall H. And if this is for the fact that they need to slow down and rethink their structure, maybe it's for the best. Who knows?
I think the problem they have now as a universe is that Wonder Woman kind of took off and was pretty successful. And now people liked Aquaman.
Right.
So the two kind of not so, I mean, what's the best way to put this? The two characters who aren't Superman and Batman are the ones that took off. And the ones that are Superman and Batman didn't take off. And now they kind of have to rethink their whole universe and whether they're going to do a universe. Because at one point it was, we're just going to do movies again and no universe connecting it. But Wonder Woman and Aquaman are still connected to a universe. So
like, who would have thought the guy who talks to fish was the most popular one?
So it's a strange position to have themselves in. Yeah. Because I feel like you almost have to, you know, flat reboot and say, let's try this again and let's start with a Batman trilogy and build off of that.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, I keep saying it, just like Marvel did with Iron Man, built an Iron Man trilogy and built off of that. But you also have these two characters and an actor and actress who are very popular and people want to see more of. So that's a really tough position to be in.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's cut to this awesome interview with Kwanzaa, and we shall see everybody on the other side.
And welcome back, everybody. Today we have a special guest. Welcome to the show, Kwanzaa Osanjifo. Welcome to the show, Kwanzaa.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And he did say the last name right, I think, right?
You got almost it? You threw an N in there.
Yeah. I really think he does this just to mess with me. Like, but we had talked about it. I'm pretty sure you're the first person I met with the name Kwanzaa that is in the comic book industry. So I don't think it'll be too hard to find you.
No, not really.
All right, dude. So let's start off with the origin story. We're going to talk about your project Ignited today. And, but let's start. Where did it all begin for you for comic books?
For the beginning for me was like really young. Like I think,
yeah.
When I was like maybe 3 years old, I was already reading comic books. I started with like, you know, the typical evolution. It was like Peanuts, Archie.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked Pogo when I was a kid. I didn't get the jokes yet, but yeah, I got all the slapstick stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I actually just bought the edition I had when I was a kid and didn't realize it was the first print. So like, I opened it up in my office and I literally heard the spine crack because it was the old kind of like, glue method where they put the pages in individually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I just like let out a yelp and just put it right back in the bag. Like,
no, seal it up.
Well, because I waited so long to read it. It's like, I wish I hadn't known that it was the first print. I would have gotten a reprint, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to actually read it. It's nice.
Yeah.
But you know, it started back then. And I think I remember it was probably like, you know, maybe it was like right after they had done like the Teen Titans, like a small recollection that was in like black and white, or like the Asgardian Wars when they did that trade, when I realized like, oh man, this is a job. Like mm-hmm. people make this. It's not just like, you know, magical mm-hmm. fairies and pixies.
Right, right. Yeah.
And so that's when I like really like started becoming a collector. And like one of the things that like, you know, I first collected was like Power Pack because I was just of that age, you know, where it's like that appealed to me. And I just kind of stuck with it. And it wasn't until like, you know, around when Milestone appeared that like I kind of had that sort of like real awakening where it's just like, holy crap, not only is this a job, but there's people who look like me who do it.
Yeah.
There's characters that look like me in it.
Right, and right.
So I was
always,
like,
that's always key to get you into something, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, like Static was just like, I was like, no, that's me right there. It's like,
yeah, right.
It's like early proto blurred, man. That was like definitely me.
That's awesome.
So, you know, I was, you know, trying to be like, you know, an amateur writer and stuff like that at the ripe age of 17 and drawing and all that stuff. So I literally cold called Milestone and told him, like, hey, I'm like the hot new artist, the dope new writer. You guys got to let me come in and pitch you some stuff.
Yeah.
And they did.
Wow. Like,
they actually let me come in, and I came in with like my portfolio that I think I found in the trash. And it's like, you know, put together like a portfolio of all these crazy, very like 17-year-old ideas for comics. Mm-hmm. And they, I walk into office and they sit me down with Dwayne McDuffie.
Oh, wow.
So here I am. Yeah, I see. I'm 17 years old. My right. voice is still cracking like a Brady kid.
Yeah.
You know, showing them all my work. And I don't know, you know, what you guys know about Dwayne, but he's just like such a gracious guy. You know, he mm-hmm. actually looked through like all of my stuff and, you know, he kind of closed and slid it back to me and just like, all right, so, you're definitely not ready to work in college. But, you know, kid, why do you want to do this? Why do you want to torture yourself this way and stuff? Mm-hmm. And it was Dwayne who actually kind of gave me what I like to call like the green book of like navigating, you know, the comic book industry. And he told me like which cons to go to, what editors to like hit up, how to get an internship at Marvel. And like, that was basically like my cheat sheet.
Yeah.
And my senior year, I had applied in my junior year, but then I did a study abroad. But my senior year, I applied to the Marvel internship program and got in.
Wow.
And then they hired me like right after college. So that was kind of like that's how I got in. If it wasn't for like Dwayne McDuffie, power pack and a little bit of childish foolishness.
Yeah, I mean, you had an in right there, right? He's like, okay, here's the rules and lists of things you need to do to get the internship.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So what was that like, the internship? I mean, were you realizing things in the industry? You're like, oh, okay, maybe this is how this works. And I don't necessarily be writing. I could be editing, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was part of it. I mean, it was actually, like, honestly the best time to, like, be at Marvel because they had, like, just survived the bankruptcy. So mm-hmm. I was walking into an office that had been, like, utterly, like, decimated. So it wasn't, like, this rosy, cool, awesome place that right. makes million-dollar movies. It was just kind of like, oh, fuck.
The wallpaper is, like, hanging out and stuff.
It really was.
Yeah.
But that's what was really cool because it gave me, you know, it gave me like a really objective view of like the industry. And I really had wanted to get into like editorial at the time because, you know, I just thought that's where everything was at. But I ended up getting an internship and online, and it was the best thing ever. Not only because it paid more, but because, you know, it was a new medium where there weren't as many rules for like how you could tell a story. And that just appealed to me. And because of that job, like I pretty much just stayed in online for the rest of my career, in and out of comic books. Just digital was my main focus.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, that's like, that was like the dawn of it all. Right. And now, so many people are going digital.
There's no Facebook, no Twitter, no, right. none of that. Man. But we were still doing like online comics. We had like the, online Marvel theater where we did these like stop motion things, like those old like mm-hmm. Marvel cartoons from like the 60s.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, they were pretty slick, man. They were fun.
That's amazing. So, like, what was the media? Everybody was just sitting at their computer waiting, like, an hour to download the comic or something to read it. Like,
it was video streaming, man. But, okay. I mean,
yeah.
You know, the good thing is, like, back then, like, everything was just, like, old-school flats because we did it all in basically a rendered line. So all of this was, like, new material. We weren't clipping old comics. We were, like, doing, like, new renders and stuff. So this was back when like Flash dominated the industry in terms of animation and stuff. So
right.
You're able to like use them to, you know, create these animations that could actually load really quickly because they were just being rendered
mm-hmm.
really
fast. Awesome. And then you got a hand in writing, right?
No, not quite yet, man.
Not yet.
So after that, I left comic books and stuff for a long while. I just kind of went into working in like online different like, you know, online companies, but it was all content. So it was just like online editorial. And it wasn't until probably around like, I think 2006, maybe, an opportunity came up at DC Comics. And I was just like, just when I think that I'm out.
They're pulling back in.
But it was a really great opportunity because what it was an opportunity to create a whole new online imprint for DC comic books. And so I became like the editor for Zuda Comics, which was this sort of like what would you call it, like a singing competition but for comic book artists.
Yeah,
American Idol.
Yeah,
American comics. And so what we would do is like every month we would get like 10 new artists and we'd put them in this online competition and let the readers decide who gets to be an ongoing comic book series.
That's awesome.
And it was really great, man, because we got to sneak in some stuff that like never would get published by DC.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was awesome. It was just like so outside of their realm of like what they do that like they just weren't like paying attention. So it's like cool. All this, like really
stuff. The internet's not going to take off. Don't worry.
Don't look over here.
Yeah, nobody's going to care about the internet.
Yeah, really, it was really cool. Like I made a lot of like friends and colleagues that I still have to this day because of that job. And it was awesome being a part of something that, you know, especially for a company like DC at the time, and maybe even still now, is just kind of like not in that space. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like push them forward a lot. It was pretty cool.
Awesome. Yeah. And I mean, you had your own ideas too, that you wanted to create as well. I mean, as besides the editing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody in comics is probably like some kind of some little bit of like artist or inker or letter or whatever and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a little frowned upon to like, you know, edit and try and create at the same time, though some people have done it and it has been done historically. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until after I left DC that like, you know, I was just doing what I did in between Marvel and DC, is like working a regular job. And I had this idea when I was, you know, going through the industry of like, you know, there's just always this like thing with like comic book characters where there's, especially like Marvel, where they're like these outsiders, you know, or they're supposed to be, except that when they take off their masks or whatever, they're just like normal dudes. Like nobody's like,
yeah,
like ostracizing them, except like maybe the Thing. You
know? Yeah, the Thing, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, I mean, he can't take his mask off, poor guy.
Right, but most of them can. So it's just like, what are you guys whining about? Like, Tony Stark, you're a billionaire. Right. Yeah. And like, and even the X-Men, it's just like, dude, nobody's pulling Wolverine over because he's driving a nice car. Yeah. You know? Right. So I had the idea of like, what if only black people had superpowers? And I was just like, whoa, wait a second. What if? Like,
yeah.
That's kind of a wild idea.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I sat on it because I was, you know, working at DC and in comics at the time, so I wasn't really going to do anything with it. But also times changed, so after I left, I was like, oh, there's like stuff like Kickstarter now. So, you know, I hit up all of my contacts and colleagues that I made, you know, through my years of working in comics, and just like, hey guys, I got this crazy idea, let's do a Kickstarter. And they were willing to jump on board, and we did pretty well with the first one. And that's kind of how I became a comic book writer, I guess.
That's awesome. Wow.
So that book, I mean, obviously it was successful, correct?
Yeah, I mean, we went into the Kickstarter asking like 30,000, and we made that in like 3 days.
That's awesome. That like almost never happens. That's so great.
Yeah, I was stunned, man, because we all really expected to be fighting tooth and nail for it, you know, to get people on board. But yeah, I did it in 3 days, and by the time we ended, it was like 90,000. So like, the idea really resonated with people.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Have you done, how many issues of that have you done?
So the first run for Black, it was originally just going to be a graphic novel, but we broke it up afterwards because it got so popular. People were like, oh, we want a comic and stuff like that, which is great because we got awesome, awesome covers on Akari Randolph. Mm-hmm. It ended up being 6 issues, like in total.
Awesome.
And then we did some spinoffs in between, and then we just did another Kickstarter for the sequel to Black, which is White. And that one did pretty well too, but it was more like what we were expecting with the first one. Like we had to fight a little bit more. And it's like, yeah, this is what it's supposed to be like.
Yeah. Make it struggle a little.
So at what point does that bring you to Mark Waid and Humanoid?
Yeah. So, you know, I'd been, you know, doing all these books and stuff like that. And I, you know, got hit up by Fabrice, who's the editor over at Humanoids, about, you know, an opportunity to do some work. And, you know, I've had other publishers and stuff like that approach me, and I've always been a little cautious just because, you know, time, you know, I have a full-time job while I write comic books.
Right.
Like, there's only so much I can take on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the idea really appealed to me because he was, you know, looking to do something really new in the industry in terms of, you know, a company like Humanoids, which, you know, is in its origins a French publisher, but in the States has done a lot of really interesting avant-garde and like diverse content. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, well, if these guys want to get into like into a realm with like, you know, superhero stuff, but that isn't superheroes, it's like, that sounds like an interesting challenge. Like, how do you tell stories that are on par with like Spider-Man and Superman,
mm-hmm.
but no costumes, no stuff, like,
don't, yeah.
Yeah. Don't do any of the trope. And I was like, hell yeah, that sounds like exactly my kind of challenge. So I just happened to be down in San Diego at the time. And so I met up with Fabrice and like, we had like a really good meeting. And I was just like, yeah, I'm in. A few months later, fast forward, like we're in an apartment in New York. It's me, Yannick Packett, Carlos B. McNeil, and, you know, hashing up like what would become like the H1 universe. And it was a really great process because, you know, like I'm usually much more of a lone wolf kind of creator. Like I sit down and like I bang out ideas and stuff, but working with like, you know, two partners, four partners and stuff like that, it was really fun to like throw stuff out there, see how it's received, see how it changes, see how it can be moved around and stuff, but still kind of have those core ideas.
Mm. All right. So we're going to talk about the dirty word, politics. So Humanoid has kind of, with this H1 universe, taking somewhat of a stance, and knowing Mark Waid, that probably stems a little bit from him. Where does the... I mean, you guys are pretty blatant about we want to discuss these types of things and these types of issues in the book. And the first issue, which I won't spoil, you attack a very heated debate in today's society. Like, was that something from the beginning that you guys really wanted to get into with this universe?
So it's funny that that idea was actually mine, and I never thought it was going to make it all the way through. I thought that they were going to put on the chopping block.
You're like, they won't do this. There's no way, but I'll throw it in there anyways.
It's funny because like I had a different title idea for the book. There were different characters. Some of that stuff like went away, but they're just like, no, we'll keep that part. I'm like, all right, awesome. Which I'm really happy about because, you know, to me, the best story is always grounded in like our reality, you know, and it's not political to me to talk about things that affect people's actual lives, whether they affect mine personally or somebody else. Like the reality is that these are things that people think, these are things that people have experienced, survived, you know, overcome. And that's what we base all of this mythology off of in the first place. I mean, when you think about like Batman, for example, like he is a survivor of a shooting. One of the most iconic characters in comic book history, like, has a very similar origin. So it's kind of an interesting thing to hear people put it in the context of politics when it's something so fundamental to, like, you know, comic nerddom.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you go back to X-Men. That was that was all about civil rights and the movement in the 60s with African Americans. So it's not something that I love when I hear people like keep politics on my comics. Like, comics have always been political. I don't like.
I mean, I think when people say that, they're saying keep certain politics out of my comics. Yes. Obviously, that's what you're saying. You know.
Yeah. But this book really, the reason I assumed it was Mark Waid's idea is because it reminds me a lot of what he was trying with Champions at Marvel and really taking younger heroes and showing more modern problems, such as an issue that really touched me, which was Miles Morales going through the school shooting.
Yeah.
And so like literally on the cover of, I can't remember, don't think it was H1 Ignited, but one of the issues, they put Social Justice Warrior on the cover. So like, I'm really interested. Like, I mean, I know you want to attack issues that are today and modern and so on and so forth, but like these types of things, these were really discussed as like, no, we're going to really hammer in that these are what these characters are about. Or was this just something that popped up?
Yeah, I think so. Cause it's funny you mentioned that issue. Cause that's one of the things that stuck out to me, you know, after we had been doing this work on H1, I'd read that same issue of Champions. And one of the things that really cemented for me that these kids should be more progressive, more active, more activists in, you know, the use of their powers is here. You have superhuman teenagers who are put into a situation like this. They've fought off alien armies from invading Earth, but school shootings are too big for them to deal with. Like that, then they become like paralyzed and feel like, oh, there's just nothing you can do. It's like, no, that's literally something you can do. You shoot webs from your freaking hands. You grow into a giant. Like, you literally can do something about this. But that to me like felt like false. And I could understand like a larger publisher not wanting to talk about it but not go all the way through. And like, we don't have those restraints. Like, let's go all the way. Let's articulate, you know, what would happen in a young person's mind if they were a survivor or something like this, but then on top of that gained superhuman abilities, you know? So like, what kind of situation does that, like, mindset does that put them in, you know? Because they're already struggling with, like, God knows what, like, survivor guilt. Mm-hmm. Like, your friend might have been one of the actual victims who didn't make it. Like, your parents being too scared. Like, there's so much that goes around that, that we just felt like it was the right territory to tell a story about, like, you know, these kids, but also still have that superhuman element that we all find in the comic books that we like. Because it can then become a catalyst for like change. Like what would you do if you could change this thing? You know, if you could have some sort of impact. And even with powers, could you do it effectively? You know, because that was the other thing. It's like I make that statement about like, oh, you fight off like aliens and stuff like that. It's like, but what if you do go and do that? Like, what are the challenges you're gonna face? Like, what's the pushback going to be?
Interesting.
So trying to build a brand new superhero universe in today's comics world is a huge undertaking, I'm sure. Did you guys discuss where things could be in like 1 year, 2 year, 5 years, 10 years, and if we're still going to be letting creators tackle these very critical issues in whatever is the problem 10 years from now? Or is it kind of like, we just want to set up a groundwork and we'll let things go as they please from there?
I think 10 years is a little far to think on any publishing plan, but we have thought like we did put down the groundwork and a Bible together for like the next like 2 to 3 years. And that was because what we really wanted to do was like have these stories have consequence. Like that's one of the big things that we felt strongly about in creating the H1 universe. It's like if a building gets knocked down, it gets knocked down. You know how much it costs for a city to like put a building back up? There's no damage control in this universe. like when things happen in this universe, we want them to pretty much stick, because if they do, then that like actually furthers the narrative. It's like, how do people deal with like loss? How do people deal with like, you know, destruction, terrorism? Like all of these things are very real. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, we don't get the, hey, they knocked down Four Freedoms Plaza and we just built a new one. It's like, what?
Yeah.
I love my fiction. I mean, a giant man from space just came down and said he was going to eat the planet. So like, yeah. I'm suspending belief here. But
yeah, right. Awesome.
So you guys have created a whole slew of characters for this universe then.
Yeah.
I saw that they're doing a bunch of individual books. Is this something where you want to keep these characters and really build the characters independently, or are we building towards sorry for the comparison, but an Avengers type?
I mean, in terms of like these characters crossing paths, I think that's just, you know, a natural thing, because we're essentially taking our world the way it is right now, that does not have, you know, latex costumes easily available and stuff like that.
And
introducing superpowers into it. And we really want to keep everything so much grounded that it's like, you have to ask yourself, because you're so used to like superhero trope, it's like, no, but really, if you got superpowers, what happens next?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, do you even have it in you to be a hero? If your only superpower is to fly, are you really going to go out there and start stopping crime? No, you're going to get shot and killed, you jackass.
Not
the smartest move, you know? Yeah. So we're really trying to operate from that standpoint of like, you know, like abilities not equating like, you know, masks and capes and all that stuff and that sort of like vigilante justice. It's more like, here's something supernatural that happens to people. How does that impact them first, the people around them, and then the world around them? Because we don't live in an age where you can really like climb into your apartment window dressed in like, you know, a red and blue leotard and not end up on like Facebook. Dude, that's right. Not happening.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Like, this neighbor has seen that enough times. She's like, I think Peter Parker's having sex with Spider-Man.
Yeah. He's like calling the window a lot.
Yeah.
I always like Kirkman's response to that in Invincible. It's like, nobody looks up.
That's true. Yeah.
But you think about that, like, nobody looks up until you have a world of superheroes and people flying around in costumes. Then everybody would be like,
yeah. Yeah, I get that.
So,
very-
Moving forward, we had the free comic book day issue.
Yep.
H1 Ignited comes out this Wednesday.
I think it came out this past Wednesday.
Okay, so it's already out.
Yeah.
And moving forward, are you doing one of the series coming out of this?
Yeah, so I'm writing Ignited with Mark Waid. It was one of those things where, you know, I really like the ability to come up with all these characters and come up with this universe. I'm really excited about Omni and Strangelands. I think, you know, we've come up with some really unique characters with unique abilities and stuff, but you know, when it came down to sitting down and writing, I was like, we need professional hands to help out here, because like I just would burn out if I tried it by myself. Mm-hmm. Plus, I'm just such a huge fan of like Mark Waid. I mean, like I'm a huge Flash nerd, man. Like down to the bones. Like I'm the first person to say, like, no, I was reading Flash before Barry.
Yeah. When
Wally came in, and yeah. I'm the first one to say the best thing that Barry did was he died. It's just I'm ice cold like that, and I've enjoyed like the new Flash stuff, but it's just like when I think of like the Flash that I loved, it's all of that Waid stuff, man. Like mm-hmm. It's all of that.
Mm-hmm. It's so good.
Yeah. So what is it like sitting in a room with Mark Waid and writing a comic or writing a universe?
It's fun, only in that like for me I'm still like very green at all of this, so I still feel like it's torturous, and I've never actually asked like Mark if that's how he feels, but he just does it like it's so matter of fact. Like mm-hmm. writing for him is like so second nature that I'll see him do stuff and I'm just like, Jesus man, how do you like it's like I'll sit there and like moon over like a page for like a whole 24 hours, and he'll just like you know bang out like a script almost fully formed. It's like I need to get there.
That's awesome. You'll probably get there one day. I mean, it just takes time, right?
Everybody's got to do what I call like their 10 years. You got to do your 10. You got to do your decade.
Yeah.
Of like writing and creating and drawing.
Awesome. Well, yeah. I mean, everybody can pick up. The H1 Ignited local comic book shop. This is an ongoing right now, right? It's not a limited series.
Yeah, it's an ongoing, but we kind of break them up into like arcs and stuff like that, because we want to have like very defined beats and whatnot. So the first four issues is like the first kind of like arc of the story, and then the next four are going to be like another arc.
Cool.
Yep, and you guys are slowly introducing more books throughout the month as Ignited, kind of the flagship, moves forward, correct?
Yeah, so the next book that's going to be coming up is Strangelands, and that's written by Mags Asagio. I forgot who is doing the art for that book, because I'm a horrible person who never remembers names, which is funny considering my name. and then we have Omni, which I believe Devin Grayson is going to be writing that one. I'm really excited for Omni, because she's just got like one of the most unique abilities and in the world, and such a unique story that I think people are going to be like thoroughly entertained. So if you're like a fan of like Sherlock and Doctor Who and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff, like, you're probably going to really dig that book.
Awesome. Yeah. Yes. You have quite a few, right? You have, is there Meyer, Big Country?
Right. But, Meyer and Big Country are part of like just the Humanoids, line of books. And each one is specifically its own like little sort of, macroverse.
Cool.
Okay. So everybody, if you're on Comixology or something, you can check out the H1 free comic book day issue, which was really great as well. And then make sure to go and pick up H1 Ignited. But if people want to follow you and follow this whole thing closer, where's the best place to send them?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram or Twitter at Kwanzer, which is not spelled like my name. It's at KWANZER.
Cool.
Okay. Awesome. So, yeah. Kwanzer, thanks again for being on the show. We really appreciate it. And good luck with the book moving forward, man.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thanks.
Thanks so much, guys.
Hey, we're back.
Wow. What a great interview. Yes, yeah, so please check out Ignited, local comic book shop. It's also available on Comixology. So. Check it out.
Indeed. I want to check out that book Black that he was talking about too.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. Awesome. All right, let's get into the comic book news. We'll see how much this one really, what comes of this, but
Marvel has expressed that they want to add weight to their characters dying by doing it less often. This sounds like an Onion article. You know, like it sounds like the title of an Onion article. It's like, we don't want to comic book science these characters anymore, but it's like, that's part of the reason comic books are awesome.
The editor-in-chief at Marvel, I forget his name, but he came out and had this whole conversation about it. I think it was at a con he got asked about it, and they said, like, you know, obviously I think it was last year they switched editor-in-chief, so this is a brand new guy doing it. And he said, you know, in the past, people come up with it with story ideas, and for better or worse, an issue that says death of Wolverine or death of whoever tends to sell a little better. So they did it quite often.
Yeah.
And he said that now we're really looking at it and saying, is this story worth telling? And not just is the death of person X worth telling, but is the stories that come out of that, like I'll use Wolverine as an example, is it worth bringing Old Man Logan to the universe and telling those stories, or is it worth having a universe without Logan and seeing how that affects the characters and the movement and things like that? And in my opinion, that's how death should be handled in comics, because yes, we know they're coming back. I mean,
right.
You're not going to kill off Steve Rogers and leave him dead forever. But this shows that at least public facing, he wants to put more focus on the stories and how things affect the grander Marvel universe moving forward. We will see how that works out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm very interested to see if he sticks to his word and actually does this.
Yeah, we'll see. I won't be reading this one, but I'm sure it'll go flying off the shelves. A Joker / Harley book, Criminal Sanity, is coming from writer Cammy Garcia and artist Mike Matthew for the DC Black Label imprint that they're doing. So I'm sure it's going to be real raunchy. Basically, yeah, what?
Are we going to get Joker's penis?
I don't know. We already got the bat dick first issue. So this is probably just some Joker Harley fan fiction. That's what they're marketing to.
Yeah.
That's all I see this as. Hey, I mean, this is a platform for it. So this is definitely for adults, and it's Joker Harley. Knock yourselves out. Read it. Let it be number one on your pull list. Hey, there's a comic for everybody out there, Chris.
Yes, it'll sell.
And this one's not for me. But
what I really don't want to see out of this, though, is people really, because in general, people have taken that Harley and Joker relationship and like put it on a pedestal. And I really hope that he explores more the fact that Joker is a fucking abuser of Harley.
Yeah, like a psychopath. Like,
is not a good guy.
Yeah, they're such a strong couple. No, yeah,
they're not in love. Like, she has just lost her mind and is loving the fact that this guy is mentally and physically abusing her all the time. Like, if you explore that, I will check this book out. If this is just like these two are in love and make crimes together, then I'll skip it. But yeah, like you said, book for everybody.
Yeah. Hashtag couple goals or something. I don't know. All right, so this is pretty cool. I saw this online and I think you backed it. You backed the backpack. Jim Lee is designing a comic book backpack with Hex on Kickstarter. So it's a comic book backpack. Hold your comics, and it's also for artists too. Very convenient.
There's actually two separate backpacks.
Two separate backpacks.
So the one, real quick, because I'm not too knowledgeable on it, but there's an artist backpack, or basically they call it a comic creator's backpack, and it's designed with a lot of things like waterproof pouching and individual spots for like brushes and pens and stuff, and places for sketchbook, all this stuff. Like, it's supposed to be able to fit a standard sketchbook in it or a portfolio book, things like that. So that's really cool. If you're a comic creator, check it out. He has a whole thing about how like his ink bottles tend to blow up in like high altitude, and this backpack can actually withstand the ink exploding without ruining everything else in the bag. So that was interesting. But the one that really affects, I'm sure, 99% of our audience and myself is the comic collector's backpack.
Right.
which is they designed a bag for people who go to comic conventions and collect comic books. And I backed it because it's a bag specifically with basically slots and to be able to hold your books, hold posters, hold lithographs, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So check out the video. It's much more in depth as to what's going on there, but you can actually put comics in there and kind of seal them and hold them together so they're not like rattling around. They even have a bag that's the size of an Overstreet comic book price guide if you are into that, and a bunch of other stuff. So, and if you do it through the Kickstarter, the addition to it is that there's a original art from Jim Lee printed on the bag, which is really cool. So
nice.
I just really thought it was a cool idea and wanted to talk about it a little bit. And I can't wait to get mine.
Cool. All right. Well, we got a couple weeks of comics to talk about. There was a few event books within those last couple weeks. If we had to pick just one to not keep people here too long, but if we just had to pick one to really talk about, I would love to talk about Doomsday Clock.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you agree?
Yeah, we'll do quick Heroes in Crisis. Yeah. There's two Wallys and he's in jail now, and that
book, that's all we need.
That book was the perfect example of really great in the beginning and fell apart in the last two issues. All right, Doomsday Clock.
Okay, Doomsday Clock. Yeah, so Heroes in Crisis, the finale came out. There's no consequences for any of these actions. There's Wally's being arrested, but the other Wally didn't really. I don't know. Tom King is arguing with people on his Twitter that it makes sense. So it must make sense. When the writer has to go out of his way to argue with fans on Twitter to tell them that, no, this is why it makes sense. So they're just like, okay.
I get what he did. I get, right. Like, even before his whole arguments with people, like, yeah, there's a Wally stuck in a time loop. I get it. But okay. Why? Yeah, let's not get into it.
Yeah.
The book's not great.
Doomsday Clock, though. Holy shit. Gary Frank's art. My God, if I could just have Gary Frank draw me the Justice Society for the rest of his career, like not even doing anything, like just Justice Society sitting around the table every issue, like that dude, the guy. Oh my God, his art is so good. But we get a lot of stuff here, so we figure out like where Dr. Manhattan goes, like basically at the end of Watchmen, right? That's kind of where we start off. He leaves the Watchmen universe. Well, and this is an interesting thing. So let's talk about the issue, right? Before I get into like theories and stuff like that. So he goes to another Earth, to another universe, right? But he ends up at that universe in 1938. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows the origin of Superman, 1938. So he's sitting there like in a diner, and it focuses on this actor too. I don't remember his name, but it's kind of like the issue follows him, and he keeps sitting down because he's the first person he appears to when he comes to our Earth is this actor who's like down and out, and he sits and has like breakfast with him at a diner, and like it shows the years going by of like, you're going to land an awesome job, this is going to happen to you, and he keeps predicting the future for this guy, and this guy's like, wow, this is amazing, how are you doing this? But he realizes that the reason he gets pulled to this Earth is because Superman's origin is about to happen. Like, and it says 1938, and like it's got him, you know, lifting the car and everything, which is pretty epic to see, right? I mean, Gary Frank drawing that was amazing. But we find out that we see him stopping Green Lantern from grabbing the lantern. We see the Justice Society missing, stuff like that. But what's curious to me is like, okay, I don't know if the 1938 on our Earth is the past or the present compared to the Watchmen Earth in 1980s. You know what I mean?
I never thought of that. But
yeah, so that's like, and I think Gary Frank had said that online or something. And I'm like, damn it, why did you have to blow my mind? But yeah, the interesting thing to Dr. Manhattan is like, he's kind of bored with the Watchmen Earth. When he gets to our Earth, he can't see anything past a certain point with Superman. Right. And we keep talking about that. And why he can't see past Superman. He doesn't know if he destroys everything or if Superman destroys him. And I mean, that's the issue goes through like him going through all the years, right? And it goes from like 1930s to 1950s to, but I just thought it was an amazing issue. I don't know.
I really like the issue, but it does. I'll say that this series has gone to a path where if you're not a DC fan, it's not going to do anything for you.
Yeah.
And this issue in particular has that issue. But they use the actor as kind of how Manhattan figures out the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically get an explanation of how DC history has changed and how Superman is the center of that change.
Right.
So for every origin, they go through a bunch of different origins that we've gotten throughout the years. And every time Manhattan attempts to either destroy or kill Superman through manipulation of time, and it pushes his origin further forward. So I thought that was interesting, and that shows that he's kind of responsible for the changes in the universe.
In the DC universe itself, yeah.
Yeah, basically a version of Hypertime.
Mm-hmm.
But what was I going to say? So, yeah, that happening is huge, but what's really big here is we get kind of an introduction that not only is Superman kind of the center of the DC universe, but we get the introduction of the metaverse, which is basically saying that there is a multiverse and there's, you know, different events happen on different planets, such as Planet X and Earth 2 and so on and so forth. But this is the Earth Prime, or whatever they're calling it now, is the center of it all. So anything that happens on DC Universe proper affects everything in the multiverse. And yeah, the whole thing with the JSA was, I was a little confused by it. Like, I get he took away their ability to get powers, and kind of erased them from history almost. I'm interested to see how their story moves in the next two issues, because we only have two to go.
Right.
But I did really like it. It's just, be wary if you're not a DC guy or haven't read a whole lot of DC. It is a tough read for somebody who's not into it. And Gary Frank's art is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it goes through, like, it tries to justify almost all the different origins that that Clark Kent has gone through over the years. Well, that's a pretty cool way of doing it, I think. Because they have the ability to do that with this character that's never been introduced to the DC universe before. So I thought it was pretty smart.
Yeah. And so here's my question for you. And I've asked a few people.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's been 2 weeks, but spoiler alert for the end of Doomsday.
Yeah, that's whatever.
So at the end, Superman wakes up. And he has a look in his eye.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling is that Superman wakes up and realizes that Manhattan has done this throughout the timeline. That he has gone back and messed up the timeline. He's the reason that things were screwy coming out of New 52.
Right.
And now has, as much as Superman can, a lust for vengeance to take care of him so he can't mess with it moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the feeling you got coming
out?
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I don't see any other way it could be taken. He's like, Dr. Manhattan says, I become the villain, and then Superman wakes up. Like,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's here. Next issue is the climax. Is that, I mean, that's what that's telling me. Like, he's like, you know, these last 9 issues, if you couldn't tell, I'm the bad dude, and then Superman wakes up. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm interested in these next two issues because they got a lot of storylines to tie up. Because, like, what happened with Batman, Joker, and the, what was it, Mime Marionette? Like,
yeah,
where are they?
Yeah,
where is right. Rorschach? What is he doing? Like, yeah, I have so many questions outside of just the Manhattan Superman.
And, like, comedian, like, got the drop on all those villains and was killing all of them, remember?
Yeah. So, yeah, I didn't even remember that until right now. So, like, there's so many things going on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they have quite a bit to wrap up, for sure. I mean, we already talked about Heroes in Crisis. Batman Last Night on Earth. Did you read that last week?
Oh, yes, I did.
Now, that is a Batman book. And I honestly don't even want to talk about
the newest Batman, Batman 72 that came out this week. But let's talk about, I want to talk about the bad one before I talk about The Last Knight. So really quick, Batman 72 basically takes every one of the story arcs from Tom King and says that Bane is the creator behind all of it. Everything, every story arc. He's like Gotham Girl, Gotham Man, the whole monster thing, the whole original series of Bane. He's just like, Bane's behind all, Bane's the mastermind. And it was a lot of hand waving to me, that he kind of just like, it's one thing to like make everything connected. Like, Scott Snyder did a great job with Court of Owls. Like that was an amazing, that was a full circle ending, right? For New 52 Batman. Tom King tries to do that, but he almost like forces you into it. And I didn't really care for it. I'm probably gonna get some flack for this, but whatever. And I don't know. It was just, it fell flat to me. Just like Heroes in Crisis did. I get the guy's got some really good writing. I just don't think it was, he tried to do something different with Batman and it didn't work. That being said, the fans seemed to love it. They said it was a genius issue, blah, blah, blah. You're doing great, blah, blah, blah. I didn't see it. Now,
so I'm going to cut in. I'm going to cut in right here. Yeah. I read Batman Volume 5 by Tom King.
Okay.
And this was, you talk about it. So this was Talia versus, Selina, when they go to Talia's, whatever's happened with Talia's like city or whatever, and it's her trying to clear the name of Catwoman. I was very lost in that storyline because I don't remember when Selina was like accused of killing all these people and why it's this woman's fault. I'm sure it was an earlier Batman thing, but I really couldn't remember any of that. And then I didn't understand why she would like, I'm going to turn you back in because I want to marry Batman. Like, it was very confusing, but there was a really great story in here, which was the double date story with Batman, Selina, and Clark and Lois.
Yeah. That is a great issue. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was the first trade where there was a story that I kind of didn't like and didn't think was necessary. The only part that I thought was necessary of it was Bruce's conversation with Damian afterwards, when he comes out of the city and they kind of talk about the wedding and why he didn't tell them and so on and so forth.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, so the next volume is Volume 6, obviously, and it is the Brighter Burglar. So we'll see how I feel about the wedding.
This is where it all begins for me, like my slow build up and distaste for this book. Batman Last Knight, Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo back at it, you know? And man, just put them back on Batman is all. After reading this book, I'm like, dude, please put them back on Batman. But apparently they don't, they're like, we don't even need to be on the main Batman book because this one's going to sell way more than that other one. So Batman Last Knight, they continue that story of, this is like New 52 Batman, right? But we're thrown way into the future. And the idea is that, you know, Batman's still cloning himself because there always needs to be a Batman, or at least Bruce Wayne is enough narcissist to think that. there always needs to be a me. You know? Yep. You can't be without me, like the whole world. You guys won't get it. It's like, how selfish is, anyways, but it's awesome. I don't care. That's how I want my Batman to be. You know, I want my Batman to be like, he's like, I'm Batman, you know, like the Frank Miller, like, fuck yeah,
I'm Batman. I'm the goddamn Batman.
Yeah, exactly. So it's post-apocalyptic, right? He wakes up, you think he wakes up, but it's basically a clone waking up. And the world's been demolished, right? He wakes up and he had a device buried out in the sand somewhere. So he wakes up, he finds the Joker head.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. The Joker's head in a jar that's just like talking to him. And I didn't know if he was like half going crazy at first, but I guess it's really the Joker's head in a jar, which is pretty, I don't know. I've never seen that before. So I was pretty impressed, that they just did that.
it seems to be like, before we talk about more of the book, it seems like this is like their no holds barred Batman book that they're just doing whatever they wanted to do before with like no restrictions.
Yeah, you know? They wanted to do what everybody wants to do, and that's tell the last Batman story.
Right. So we get to see post-apocalyptic Wonder Woman. Basically, what's left of the humans and the few heroes that are left are in hiding underground. And their idea is to go to Gemworld, which is like, holy shit, I forgot Gemworld. You know, it was like that, one of the new 52 early launch books was like, I think there was an Amethyst book or something like that. Yep. Nobody ever read. But yeah, so they're like, what a great place. Even the readers won't go there. Much like the fans of DC, we forgot about Gemworld. So they're like, we're going to seek refuge because basically the world's going to end, right? Hades is coming to Earth. Yeah, which is that's a cool story in itself. You get like, you know, the Greek god of the underworld is coming to destroy everything. I thought it was a great first issue. I'm on board for the series.
I absolutely love this issue. Yeah. It checked every box for me. You skipped over my favorite part of the whole book, though. Yeah. So it's divided into chapters.
Right, yeah. And I read this 2 weeks ago. Yeah, it's tough.
And chapter one is, so you talked about Bruce's clone coming out and going to the world. Before that, he's stuck in this virtual reality thing, and he thinks that he's actually, this is the world he's woken up in. So we get Bruce waking up and everybody telling him he's crazy and that his parents were killed and he went insane and he invented the Batman in his brain. Mm-hmm. And all the villains were actually different doctors that were trying to help Bruce get better. And like that whole dynamic there and how they made the different doctors, the different characters from Batman lore was awesome. And then even after that, the book still stayed with me, but I really wanted to see more of that world. Like was a cool, cool story.
Right.
But yeah, this issue was great. It's an amazing first issue. And I love Capullo on Batman. Like his art fits Batman so well. And it's fantastic.
Yeah. It's, it's crazy. Yeah. The whole first half of the book is that, is basically, you know, we think he's going crazy and then he pops out of the sand. You're like, what the hell's going on here? And then part of the post-apocalyptic thing is like these people have lantern rings and they're being like dragged around like zombies and like the rings are generating these like giant killer babies that are running around.
Weird.
It's weird. They don't have the willpower to like manifest anything, so I think what I was trying to say is they're mindless almost, so they're almost like toddlers. It's nuts. The whole issue is nuts. The art is amazing. I mean, come on.
The back and forth between Bruce and Joker makes the book as well.
Yeah, that's the banter. And then like, we see Wonder Woman and Ivy, Supergirl, is still alive. Wonder Woman with the mohawk, which is awesome. And then she's wearing Dr. Fate's helmet, but we find out Dr. Fate's helmet's basically useless now. It's a great first issue. I'm on board. This is what I want out of a book. I don't know. Just
I hope that Black Label continues on and we get more stuff like this.
Yeah,
because to me, Batman Damned was a bit of a disappointment, even though it got a lot of coverage. And I was worried it was going to kill these projects moving forward, but hopefully this one kind of resurrects it and makes them really push Black Label even further.
So I'm just going to talk about what I read this week. Shazam, really good issue. The Billy and Mary get kicked out of the Magic Lands, and so they're trying to figure out. Mary's like, "Well, we got to save everybody else." while Billy finds that his dad is at the house, and his dad basically says to him, oh yeah, you know, I was a criminal, blah, 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 but I need your help to go find your mom because I'm still in love with her. So obviously that's a trap. I mean, I don't believe this guy for a second.
It's a trap.
It's a trap. Meanwhile, Dr. Silvana and Black Adam are fighting each other, which is pretty awesome, with a little bit of commentary by Mr. Mind, because he can't actually do anything but talk shit to people. And then we get the entrance of Pedro and I can't remember his other name. The two kids that are transformed hang in the game lands, steal a car, and they get into the race to try to get out of the game lands. And the wizard Shazam appears. He's like, "What are you kids doing here? You're messing everything up." That's basically how the issue ends. So we can see a grumpy old Shazam use some powers, maybe.
Yes, and then the Funlands, the guy leading the Funlands is about to march a bunch of children to war, which right. I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't think about that part. Yeah, he's like, we're going to war, round up the children. So there's, I don't know, they're going to kill people with candy canes or something. I guess we'll find out. Yeah, so that's pretty much all I had time to read this week. Oh, Green Lantern number 8, I believe. It was the Green Lantern, Green Arrow issue. Like the, you know, they used to do the team up back in the day. This is Green Lantern number 8. Yeah. Crazy issue. Obviously it's Grant Morrison. So it can't just be a Green Lantern, Green Arrow. It has to be Green Lantern, Green Arrow discovering a giant Green Arrow from another universe that they call Zine Arrow with an X. And, you know, this guy's like, he's like a 30-foot tall Green Arrow and with like a 50-foot long arrow that he's like, he's been knocked out and they have to figure out what's wrong with him. Meanwhile, this other guy who's part of like a villain crew is about to assassinate like someone on Earth. And so they're like, oh, he's going to shoot this cannon from, I mean, this is a true comic book. He's going to shoot this cannon from the moon. So they're like, well, we have this 30-foot arrow here. Why don't you just use your power and make a giant bow and we'll shoot this arrow at the guy on the moon. It's like, sure, why not? Makes sense. It's a lot of fun. It was basically a one shot. And I think that's what these are turning into because it says next issue, we're going to meet the Green Lantern of Earth 20. So I think we're just going to get different Green Lanterns now from other universes, which is like, I think Grant Morrison is like, this is what I'm doing for the next month or next year or so. Which I'm cool with that because I really enjoyed the issue.
Yeah, I've always wanted them to bring back the Green Lantern Core book.
Right.
Because I think I have a collection that's basically, it's everything Alan Moore did for DC. And some of my favorite stories that he did for DC were in these Green Lantern Core books because it's all just one-shot stories of different Green Lanterns from different universes. And it's fantastic. So that makes me happy. I hope that's what he's doing.
Yeah. But that's all I've had to read. Yeah, a little behind.
So I won't spoil too much, but Justice League 25.
Yeah, it's Justice League.
It wraps up the storyline that we've been going through in the sixth dimension. I really enjoyed it. The Batman turning on everybody plot was wrapped up very well. I liked how they handled it. And then we kind of get a time jump and they come back to the Earth proper and Luther has basically told the entire world that the source wall is broken and it's the Justice League's fault.
It's their fault. They did it.
And not only that, but he's like, he gives away everything, his fortune, his patents, everything, and says, you can have it. We need to fight against what's coming. So he basically is creating an army out of people on the world or on the Earth and turning them against the Justice League. It was a really cool start to what is now going to be called the Year of the Villain. And it kind of puts a conclusion to the Year of the Villain one shot, the 25-cent issue they did last month, I believe.
Yep.
Really great issue. A big issue because it's an exercise anniversary issue.
Oh, wow.
Deceased number 2.
Yeah, I gotta read that too. First one left off with Batman about to fight Robin and
and Alfred, right? Zombie Robin and Zombie Alfred.
Yeah, and Batman got bit.
Oh, no.
So we get Zombie Batman, which was pretty fantastic. And we get Zombie Green Lantern, which was also fantastic.
And Zombie Batman, still no kung fu?
That is a great question.
That's a question in the comic book shop, I think.
Yeah, I liked it. It was, so there's a couple stories going on. We see where Aquaman is during all this, and we don't really know his fate. We get a continuation of what Superman's doing, and they decide to go to the planet, and the Daily Planet, that is, and try to broadcast something out to people that isn't on a cell phone. We get the conclusion to what happens to Batman, and he's in a Mr. Freeze suit trying to stall the virus while he tells everybody what happened and what caused it. Because, of course, he's Batman, so even though he's infected, he still figured out everything.
Yeah,
of course. and a fantastic moment with Batman and Alfred. So I'm shocked at how much I enjoy this book. I hope that they're building a Marvel Zombies-esque universe and do like more of these moving forward, assuming it keeps being as good as it is. Guardians of the Galaxy Annual Number 1. So, ooh, look. Cloak and Dagger, everybody.
Oh.
So, somebody has control over Cosmo, the cosmic dog, and he's trying to gather these different heroes together for some purpose. And it's three stories that all kind of bind together that are going to lead into the next issue. And it was fun. It was good. I thought it was a little unnecessary, but... I did enjoy the Adam Warlock story because I do love me some Adam Warlock.
Yeah, not enough of that guy for sure.
Let's see. Savage Avengers number 2 was really good. We get Punisher coming to this the Savage Lands to figure out what's going on. I don't know if this is a new power or not, but in the last issue, the Foot kills Brother Voodoo. And so Wolverine stabs himself and injects his blood into Brother Voodoo's heart, and that resurrects him.
What?
So yeah, that happened.
Okay.
It's a fun, like, try not to think too much because people are just going to hack and slash book. We get how Venom is going to be involved, and it's not Eddie Brock. And a bunch of back and forth with Conan. So I really like it, but... who knows? It might just be a me book. Walking Dead 192. Long story short, I was right all along. This book is about Carl. It's not about Rick because Rick is dead. We get Rick's death in this. We get the person punished and sent to a prison cell for this. And kind of what Carl's backlash is from this. And him trying to be the leader now. And trying to basically portray himself as Rick. And then at the end, he breaks down and says, like, I can't do this. Like, I'm not him. And I can't really mourn him because I'm trying so hard to do what he would do in this situation. So I really liked it. It's kind of a soft reboot for the book. I'm sure the next issue is going to be some big memorial to Rick. And since we're coming up on issue 200, I'm sure something huge is going to happen that forces Carl into a situation. But I did enjoy it. I'll say that.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, it was bound to happen, right? I mean,
yeah, I've been saying forever that this... I mean, I've been saying they were going to kill him on issue 100 or issue 150. And then I thought it was going to be issue 200. But they chose a random issue to do it. And I kind of respect that decision. And it just proves my point that I've always believed that this book is about Carl and him growing up in the zombie apocalypse and what he's going to do as an adult in the zombie apocalypse. And then I'll finish War of the Realms number 5. I really liked it. It's kind of the lead up to the final fight, which I'm pretty sure is a 6-issue series. So next issue. And it's a lot of Thor trying to figure out what to do and how to get in contact with Malekith and showing different fights throughout the world. It was a very beautiful issue, and in terms of the art, and I really enjoyed it because it's a lot of punchy-punchy.
Punchy-punchy.
And I hope the next issue is just as punchy-punchy. So, War of the Realms is really good.
Good. I'm glad.
And then Brocko's Barn Afterlife number 3. Oh, I like it. Man. It's fun. It's just a fun old time. It's kind of strangely similar to Deceased, though, because it is cell phones that turn everyone into zombies.
I think they're trying to tell us something. I think they're saying that the human race are a bunch of zombies.
Yeah, there's also a really great moment in here where Philbert hits on one of the characters, and he gets turned down. And so he goes on his cell phone to figure out why he was turned down, He finds like a men's rights activist website.
Oh no!
Yeah, it was pretty fantastic.
Oh no!
Because he's in the background while things are going on. And he's just like, I knew it wasn't my fault. And then there's one part where he's just like, wait a second, I have rights. Men have rights.
Oh no!
It's very tongue in cheek, but so those are all my books, Mike.
Awesome.
With that,
what a week.
People find you on the internet.
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you, Chris, and or the show?
They can find me at Fortress Chris on Twitter or FCN underscore official on Twitter for the show. And you can find everything at FortressComicNews.com. And if you want to support the show, there's multiple ways to do it. You could give us a 5-star review on iTunes. You could like, share, subscribe to the YouTube channel. You could go to our website and use the Amazon banner because that's fun. Or if you want to be a super special, awesome person, you can go to patreon.com/ForgeComicNews and get my other show, Bat Friends Podcast, 3 days early. The last episode just came out, well, we're publishing this Monday, so 4 days ago, and it was titled Enjoy Your Frozen Dick.
Nice.
Listen to that, because we take the story Heart of Ice and we turn it into the worst thing ever.
Wow. That's so sad. That's one of my favorite episodes. I don't know.
It is. And afterwards, we were like, we just completely mocked and ridiculed the best episode of Batman Animated Series.
Wow.
But it was a lot of fun. And I think you'll enjoy it.
Awesome.
So thanks for listening, everybody.
See ya.
Bye.